This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Friday today. I'm leaving a little bit early from my client. They have a big deployment tomorrow, and I am on the periphery of that deployment. Thankfully, it's not mine solely because it's a big one, but I'm on the periphery, and I'll have just a little bit of work to do for that, so I'm going to come in tomorrow for a couple of hours. I need to make one slight adjustment. Sorry for the noise. There we go. Okay. It's been a great week. One of the things that, I should mention the sound. Hopefully the sound is different this week, and hopefully it's better. You know, one of the problems of being a sound guy in church for as many years as I was a sound guy in church is that you really want sound to be right. And the fact that it's phasing and that it's clipping and that is like, the microphones were pretty cool last week, but, and they worked sort of, but, you know, I finally just decided I really just need to upgrade and get a better recorder. So I did that, and hopefully this will be the very last change of all of this, and we can just go forward. Now, I'll tell you right now, the way this particular recorder works, I had to flip it upside down so it didn't sound like you were actually sitting on the dashboard looking at me, and I'm just checking right now to make sure that we are actually recording, and then I'll quit piddling around with it. Okay, here we go. All right, on with the show. This is episode 4. One of the really great things about sharing your lives with others and actually having something to share such that you can help people create a comprehensive environment of success for themselves. One of the really great things about that is that as you do that, as you move forward with that, sooner or later, one of your friends is going to come back and tell you a story, a great story about what the Lord has done for them at that moment. And a couple of weeks ago, I had a buddy come by, and he looked at me and he said, "I was so mad at you this weekend." Of course, my standard response is, What? I apologize. What do I need to apologize for? I was so mad at you. I said, "What happened?" He said, I was going back for some kind of family function. I forget what it was. And I think it was in Pennsylvania. It was like a 1,000-mile drive. I mean, this huge drive. And he's going along, and in Ohio somewhere, he gets distracted for a few minutes, and before he knows it, he's on a turnpike in Ohio. And he looks down at his GPS unit, and his GPS unit tells him he's got 22 miles till the next turnaround. And he's just like, 22 miles there, 22 miles back. It's like, you know, going to add up to 45 miles by the time it's all said and done, by the time he makes the turn and all that kind of stuff. And he's just like, "I don't want to add another 45 miles to this 1,000-mile trip already." So he looks over to the side of the road, and there's one of those emergency vehicle turnarounds coming up. And he thinks to himself, "I could just go through that." So he starts slowing down, and all of a sudden there's this little voice within him that says something along the lines of, "Don't do it. If you do it, you're going to get caught, but don't worry about it. I'll take care of it." Now, I should first adjure you, my friends, not to get wrapped up in legal technicalities and syntax at this point, okay? The point of this story is not for us to go off on rabbit trails and talk about what God may or may not say to us in our lives, blah, 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 blah. The point of this story is to realize that God has a wonderful sense of humor, okay? So, having said that, we continue with our story. So, he kind of slows down, and he makes the turn. He goes right through one of those, you know, illegal turns, right through the emergency vehicle turnaround. Sure enough, a couple of minutes later, you know, here comes the state trooper. So he pulls over and he said, "You know, I tell you honestly, the whole time that this was going on, I wasn't stressed about it. Because I had heard this little voice inside me that said, 'Don't worry about it, I'll take care of it.' So this state trooper comes up and just starts, you know, chewing him out one side down the other. He said, 10 minutes the guy chewed on me. And he said, the whole time, I just stayed real calm. I decided I'm going to play this thing out to the very end. You know, I'm just going to do this the right way. He said, I just said, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, I did. He said, I admitted to everything. He said, I said, yes, I did that, and it was wrong. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I mean, he went through the whole thing. So after about 10 minutes, he said, this guy kind of slows down a little bit, and he says, well, I can see, I can think you're an honest man. So I'm just going to give you a warning. He says, oh, well, thank you, sir. He says, yeah, but you have to, when you get off the toll booth here, you need to go up to the toll booth lady and apologize for stealing from the great state of Ohio. So he said, okay, I'll do that, sir. I'll do that. So he goes and he talks to the lady. I'm giving you the abridged version because I could stretch this out and spend 20 minutes on it because it's a great story. I'm giving you the abridged version. So he goes up, talks to the lady, you know, and she says, well, the best I can do for you is just charge you a $10 lost ticket fee. And he says, I'll pay it. Thank you. You know, so takes care of it. And she says, but, you know, your troubles are just beginning. And he said, well, why? She said, well, you know, there's a mandatory fine on this ticket and there's a mandatory court appearance. So, you know, you're going to be back up here. And he said, well, I didn't get a ticket. I just got a warning. And he said the toll booth lady was just flabbergasted. She said, you didn't get a ticket? She said, they always write tickets for this. She said, you have to understand, we have your car on videotape. It's a lock. We've got you. This ticket is a mandatory $700 fine and a mandatory court appearance. She said, they never give warnings. This is easy money for the state. And my buddy said, well, you know, he just gave me a warning. And the lady said, well, have a nice day. And that was that. And my buddy said he got back to his car, got back in his car, and he sat down in front of the wheel, and he thought, Phil! He said, I was so mad at you. I said, what? What did I do? And he said, well, you know, if it hadn't been for your book, and if it hadn't been for our talks, he said, I probably would have just driven the 22 miles, taken the exit, turned around, and drove the 22 miles back. He said, but because I read your book, and because we talked, he said, I knew that was the voice of God within me. And he said, I made a decision at that point that I was going to follow this thing all the way through and see what happened. And he said, I had to go through all that because of you. And I smiled. And I said, yeah, but it was kind of fun, wasn't it? And he smiled and he said, yeah, actually it was. Because you see, he will carry that experience with him the rest of his life. Because he'll know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the eternal communicated with him and that the eternal caused something to happen that should not have happened, and he knew it was going to happen ahead of time. And that's pretty cool. Okay, topic for this week. Topic for this week is leadership. I'm amazed at the number of times that the topic of leadership comes up in conversations with friends. What is our relationship to leadership? And specifically, what is our relationship to our spiritual and or religious leadership? How do we work with them? You know, what responsibilities do we have to them in terms of submission to authority and those kind of things? And honestly, I have heard plenty of people in my lifetime, you know, make the claim that the worst thing that has ever happened to the world is organized religion. You know, I've heard that claim all my life. But honestly, I mean, if you really look at it, you realize that what they're possibly saying is the worst thing that's ever happened to the world is the leadership of organized religion. Because in any organization, the tone of the organization is set by the leadership. And if we look through history, you know, I think honestly we could kind of come to the conclusion that there probably wouldn't have been an Inquisition without religious leadership. There probably wouldn't have been Crusades without religious leadership. There probably wouldn't be suicide bombers and jihadists without religious leadership. So what can we say as those who are led about religious leadership, and how do we operate within that sphere, and how do we create an environment of success? I read a great story this last week that pretty much exposes all the potential hazards of religious leadership. I talked about Nancy Easland's book last week called The Disabled God. And in chapter 2 of that book, she recounts the experiences of two women, one who had been disabled from birth and another who had developed MS and had become disabled during her life. The first woman's name was Diane DeVries. And honestly, I'd kind of like to meet this lady because she just sounds wonderful. She was born without legs. She was born with arms that terminated just above the elbow, so she doesn't have any hands. But her dad apparently was very pragmatic and told her from a very early age, looks, things just happen in life, and this is just who you are, and this is how you were born. So, you know, let's just go on from there. And so she had a very healthy sense of her body and a very healthy sense of who she was. In the process of living, she came to a point where she was born again, and she joined a church. And in the process of that, she felt like God spoke to her and told her that she would have a ministry in singing, a prophetic ministry in singing. And she made what seems to me to be a perfectly obvious conclusion that she should join the choir to get some experience. Well, sounds good to me. So she goes and she attempts to talk to one of the pastors about joining the choir. Now, she doesn't say which pastor it is, so I have no idea. But I would seriously hope it wasn't the music pastor. But anyway, so she goes to talk to one of the pastors about joining the choir. And the pastor's response is, well, there's not really any there's stairs, and there's not really any way for you to get up in the choir loft. And she said, well, you could build a ramp. I've noticed that some of the choir members, they're actually obese, and they seem to be having some trouble with those stairs, and that would help them. Oh, well, yeah, that's true, but, you know, we don't really have a robe that would fit you. I mean, we just don't have a robe that would fit you. And she said, you know, I'd be happy to pay to have a robe made, especially for me, if that's a problem. Oh, you know, and then when the choir sings, you know, the choir stands up, and you would still be seated, and it would just be uneven. And, of course, by this time, Diane DeVries gets the message. You know, we don't really want you up front because we're concerned about how it will look. That's my conclusion. We're concerned about what people will think. That's my conclusion. Although it's pretty hard to come to any other conclusion because, frankly, I've been a choir director. I was the choir director at our church for 15 months. And the music minister, interim music minister, while we were trying to get somebody else to be the music minister. And I can tell you this, it was hard enough to recruit people for choir, but if I've got someone coming to me and saying, I'd like to be in the choir, I would always say yes. And then I'd say, by the way, do you even sing? You know, I mean, because if they had a heart to be in the choir, I didn't even care if they could sing very well. Because I figure I can get them in choir, I can work with them, we can work out the singing part. But here you have a situation where you have a willing heart and it's being turned away by religious leadership. And the question that has been posed to me more than once is, what do you do when the leadership over you is behaving in a way that is obviously driven by flesh? Because there's really not much of another way to interpret this. So what do you do in that situation? And my response is, well, your response should be twofold. First of all, as followers, just because we're followers, it doesn't mean that our responsibility to raise our hand is somehow negated. Well, you're just supposed to sit there and be quiet. That is not our responsibility as followers. In fact, I would contend that our responsibility as followers, when we see leadership that is potentially making a bad decision because of flesh, it's our responsibility to put our hand up and say, excuse me, is that really the decision that you want to make there? Because I can see some potential problems with that decision, and I can see that that may take us down a road that we don't want to go. So that's really the first response, in a very respectful way, to raise your hand and say, you know, excuse me? And then our second response, if leadership says, no, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. I'm the guy making the decision. We're doing it. Okay, well, fine. I think our second response then is grace. Because grace is a very important thing for us to show. And there's a reason that we show grace. We understand that we have a struggle with flesh and spirit in our lives. We understand that our leadership has a struggle with flesh and spirit in our lives. And by administering grace to our leadership when that happens, what we do is we actually create an environment for ourselves where we can understand that there can be grace ministered to us. Because if we as a human being can show grace to another human being, how much more can God, being God, show grace to us? So this gets back into that idea of reciprocity, that what you feed out to other peoples is fed to you. What you give to others is given back to you. And so always, 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 when you're in a situation where, you know, leadership is just saying, okay, that's it, that's what we're doing, you know, you just say, well, I hope that works out well, you know, let's try it. Now, there does come a time, and we'll find this time in our story where there is another response, but let's go back to our story of Diane DeVries. You see, in an ideal world, what should have happened at that point, as soon as she realized what the real problem was, what should have happened at that point in an ideal world, is she should have raised her hand and saying, you know, I'm getting the impression that the decision as to whether or not I'm in choir is not really a decision that is being made because of spirit, but it's because of flesh. And here's why I come to that conclusion. God says in His Word that man looks on the outside, but God looks on the heart. And if He has spoken to my heart and said, you need to be in the choir, you need to be a minister in song, and I am willing to serve, my outward appearance should make no difference in this. And in an ideal world, what would happen is her religious leadership at that time would have an understanding of what is flesh and what is spirit. And that understanding would then click over in the heart of her leader, and her leader would say, okay, you know what? You're absolutely right. I got all caught up in what the flesh was trying to whisper to me, and I lost sight of the fact, first of all, that God looks on the heart. And let's do something about that. Let's put you in the choir, and if any of the people in the church come to me and they have a problem with that, I'm going to use that as an opportunity then to speak to them about the difference between flesh and spirit, and how in the spirit we are all loved of God. You see, the really cool thing about this type of interaction, if it would ever actually occur, is because what the follower has done is not only created an environment of success for themselves, but by raising their hand and saying, have you thought about this? They have created an environment of success. Don't get that word wrong. Created an environment of success for the leader. Because the fact of the matter is, if the leader is behaving in a fleshly way, it's just making the flesh stronger within that leader. And that leader is not going to succeed by making the flesh stronger, because the flesh never quits. You see, it's like Hitler. You can't give the flesh Poland and hope that it doesn't invade Europe. You know, you can't go over there and have your little conference and come back and say, well, we have appeasement now and it will be peace in our time, because it won't be. Because whatever measure the flesh can extract in behavior out of that leader, it will just grow more and more as that leader allows that flesh to be manifested. And our responsibility, if the leadership understands flesh and spirit, our responsibility as those who are led are to provide an environment of success for that leadership by raising our hands and making observations, not to criticize, not to say, well, I just feel like what's happening, not any of that stuff, but to say, here's the reason why I think this decision is being driven by flesh. And we should know our scripture well enough, and we should know God well enough to be able to verbalize it and put that into the correct context to give our leaders a chance to reflect to it. And I'm just telling you right now, I saw a special on PBS this last week that perfectly illustrates what happens if religious leadership gets sent down a path where their flesh is being manifested more and more, and it is disaster. Because I saw the special on Jonestown, and it was just heartbreaking. For those of you who don't know the full story of Jonestown, I'm not going to go through it here, but you can get on the internet and you can look it up. Just put in Jonestown. What happened was, I just got on my gravel drive here. I'm going to drive slow, so I have a few more seconds. What happened was, is this was a minister who started in L.A. and started off really well, adopting children and pulling people around him, an environment of love. Eventually, they decide that they need to go and start this community down in Guyana. By this time, there were plenty of signs that there were trouble. You know, when you go back and look at the history, it's not hard to figure out that there's flesh being manifested here. But he's got this following of people around him. They believe in him. They're completely missing the signs, probably because they have no tools to figure out what is flesh and what is spirit. They end up in a country down south, I think it was Guyana, out in the jungle. And a senator comes down, or a congressman comes down, to kind of check them out. In the process of all the events, Jim Jones eventually sends men out to the congressman's plane, and they mow everybody down with machine guns. And then Jim Jones tells everybody, oh, well, you know, now we don't have any other option, because once the word of this gets out, they're just going to come, and they're going to take their children, and they're going to dismantle us all, and they're going to do this, and they're going to do that. I'm getting my mail. And he convinces these people that there is no hope, which of course is another flesh tool. There is no hope, and the only thing they should do now is drink this Kool-Aid that certain of his followers have prepared with cyanide. And so all of these people at this compound begin drinking this Kool-Aid, and there's this mass suicide. And it's a horrific thing. And one of the individuals who actually escaped that, there were just very few that who escaped it. One of the individuals who escaped that actually had to sit and watch his wife die and watch his baby die. In fact, he had to sit and watch them squirt this Kool-Aid into his baby's mouth. And I'm watching this program thinking, you have got to be kidding me. I'm backing into my garage now. You have got to be kidding me. Because, you see, the Bible doesn't say for no good reason that for lack of knowledge my people perish. You had a situation where you had this whole congregation of people, well-intentioned people, you know, people who wanted to create a community of love, and they end up in the jungle. And because they don't have the tool set to show them the difference between flesh and spirit, because their leadership doesn't have the tool set to recognize the difference between flesh and spirit, and because there is not this joint participation where those who follow put up their hand and say, you know, wait a minute, some things don't make sense here, you end up with all these people committing mass suicide when the signs were very evident. I mean, there was like a big, huge sign that this was a problem. Because going into the compound, the big, huge sign over the compound read, "Welcome to Jonestown." It didn't say, "Welcome to the harbor of peace, welcome to the community of love, welcome to the house of prayer." It said, "Welcome to Jonestown." And that's a pretty good indication right off the bat that, in fact, this was being driven by flesh. And you can bet that if something is being driven by flesh, at the end of the day, there will be destruction. I have made it home. Have a great weekend. And because this is actually upside down and I don't have a remote control yet, I'm actually going to have to flip it up and then push the off button. But next week, I expect to have more technology so that I can just go click without even open this thing up. So anyways, I'm going to pick this thing up and it's going to go. Have a great weekend.